happy and gay. We're marching to a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race. Springtime for Hitler and Germany. Rhineland's a fine land once more. Springtime for Hitler and Germany. Watch out, Europe, we're going on tour. Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Look, it's winter.
Winter for Poland.
Born in Dusseldorf, and that is why they call me Wolf.
Don't be stupid, be a smarty. Come and join the Nazi party.
Thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining this broadcast or listening to Sometimes the Facts Don't Matter, research suggests that misinformed people rarely change their minds when presented with the facts and often become even more attached to their beliefs. The findings raise questions about democracy that depends on well-informed voters.
And Brendan Nyhan, I wonder, is there any evidence that over time, as things become perhaps less emotional, the metaphorical, the devil's horns and the tail come off the issue and people are able to reconsider?
It's certainly possible. You know, we saw something like this with weapons of mass destruction. You know, that was one of the primary rationales for the war in Iraq. And so even after, that rationale had largely been disproven, people hung on to it. But over time, we saw this kind of flattening out as people shifted onto other rationales for the war or even came to oppose it. So I think, you know, as these issues become less salient, you know, people can admit, maybe that they were wrong. But that takes a long time. And in a lot of cases, you know, the damage has already been done.
I suspect people admit that mistakes were made. Not necessarily that
right.
They were wrong. Here's an email from Johan in Dundas in Ontario, Canada. I'm reading Christopher Hitchens' book, God is Not Great Currently, so this phenomenon of evidence rejection is especially relevant to me right now. Are people who adhere to fundamentalist religions more likely to reject evidence and facts in favor of their strongly held views, religious or otherwise? Brendan, is this restricted to one worldview or one political ideology?
I don't think so. I don't think so. There are people who have made that case in the psychological and political science literatures, but I think the jury is still out. And you know, the conclusion that my co-author and I came to is that this is really a human problem. And you know, we conducted experiments where we found similar resistance to evidence among liberals. And there's other examples like that out there as well.
Well, let's go next to Chrissy. Chrissy with us from San Francisco.
Yes, I'm just calling to say I changed my mind on two different issues. One about gun ownership. I was originally from Utah. and I didn't think that people should be able to have guns, and I just thought people were crazy to actually have their own guns. And then I started talking to more people and kind of educated myself, and it turned out the man that I married, his father makes bullets, and I went out shooting, and I actually think that people should be able to own their own guns. Of course, I think background checks, and you know, there needs to be some controls over that, but I changed my mind pretty dramatically just through self-education. And then I also changed my point of view on the death penalty. I really believe that people, if they were convicted, they were dead wrong, and they really should be killed. And then I educated myself again, and I just don't really believe in the death penalty at all. I just don't think that everyone has the same upbringing, the same choices, the same monetary backgrounds, and so I'm really against the death penalty now. So I've changed my point of view just really through, I think, self-education and actually really great programs like this that are offered to us through NPR.
Well, Chrissy, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Patrick in Puyallup in Washington. This topic is so important, I feel, points to the heart of so many of today's social problems, why so much doesn't get done in politics. The lack of humility makes it hard to take an honest look at one's own views and opinions, causing people to stick with talking lines they know to be contrary to the facts. And Dana, getting back to the immigration issue and the state of Arizona, talking lines they know to be contrary to the facts? I'm not sure that's right.
I think in some cases that is right. It's important to make a distinction between beliefs that people hold and the facts. So a lot of the emailers and the callers have spoken about, you know, evolution or nuclear energy or guns and the death penalty. Obviously, people can have very different opinions, and there should be a debate on all of these things. But there should be a common body of facts that everybody can agree on and yet have a difference of opinion. And that's certainly the case with immigration as well. But I think when you have a public figure like John McCain saying Phoenix, the largest city in his own state, is the number two kidnapping capital in the world, it's already been disproven by neutral independent parties. And he continues to say it. I mean, look, you can't say the man's lying because you don't know what's going on inside his head. But you have to say he certainly should know by now that what he's saying is false, yet he continues to say it.
The phenomenon also plays out every day in the office of NPR. NPR's ombudsman, Alicia Shepard, receives and responds to listener comments and complaints about NPR News, those so infrequent complaints, and she joins us here in Studio 3A. Lisa, nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you.
And where do you see this? Give us an example of how this manifests itself.
Well, I wanted to follow up, I will, but with what Dana said, beliefs versus facts, I think it's the context that they selectively hear. And it's just phenomenal to me how I can have people call about the same story and yet have heard it so differently. And I think that plays into something called the hostile media effect, which is that the more neutral a news story is, the more people are likely to bring their own beliefs and biases and points of view towards that story, and they hear it very selectively.
This used to be more difficult in the old days when we just had our own memories of audio recordings. These days, there are transcripts.
There are transcripts, and then there's John Stewart to remind people what what they said once.
Give us an example of how this manifests in your office.
Well, for example, there was a story last week about Netanyahu's visit to the White House, and in it, the one particular listener was very upset and said that this story was very biased, and he said because it only quoted these people. And then I went back and listened, and I spoke with Ari Shapiro, who had done this story, and he said, well, I also quoted, and he named two other people who represented that man's views. But he falls into that hostile media effect where he listened very selectively and focused on that. And he was also influenced potentially, or I won't say he was, but he could have been, by a piece that was on the National Review online, particularly criticizing that story. So sometimes it's not even a matter of whether they heard the story. It may be something they've read or a listserv that they're on that says, contact the ombudsman or NPR did this today.
I wonder, Dana Milbank, does it help when your stories are always in black and white?
Well, it certainly helps people come up with reasons to disagree with it. I mean, it is nice to be able to point to something and say, okay, show me where the complaint is. I mean, there's a difference between a factual error and just somebody not agreeing with you or feeling that you sort of stack the deck one way or the other. If there is a factual error, we want to run a correction. If they're just saying I didn't like what you wrote, well, then you maybe should write a letter to the editor, because that's a disagreement of opinion as opposed to a disagreement over fact.
Dana Bilbank, national political columnist with the Washington Post, also with us. Brandon Nyhan, a Robert Wood Johnson scholar in health policy research at the University of Michigan, and Lisa Shepard, NPR ombudsman. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Brandon Nyhan, I wanted to, this is, as I read in your account, a very young field of inquiry.
It is. You know, political science, for a long time, we focused on things like, could you name all the Supreme Court justices? How many years does a senator serve for? Things like that. And, you know, you can do those surveys and you find that people don't know a lot of those things. But I'm not sure it really matters so much whether you know those things. At best, they're a proxy for some, you know, more general sense of sophistication about politics. But these misperceptions, you know, we haven't studied them. And they are important because people are changing their minds in some cases based on, it's influencing their vote. It's influencing their opinion. They're not just holding these misperceptions, they're holding them actually in some cases more confidently than people who have the correct view. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the reason they're so hard to dissuade.
And Lisa Shepard, I'm not going to argue that NPR is never wrong, never makes mistakes, but have there been phenomena where you say, dear reader, if you take a look at the transcript of this story, and I've talked to the reporter, and you see that the other side that you complained was not represented was represented, have they come back and said, oh, I'm sorry, I was wrong?
I have to say, very rarely does that happen. It's usually, but you didn't consider this or you didn't consider that. I mean, sometimes the transcript is tremendous evidence that it was considered. But but Mr. Nyhan talked mm-hmm. about misperceptions. And I still think it goes back to clinging to your personal beliefs and hearing and reading things through the prism of your personal beliefs.
Let's get one more caller in. This is Pat. Pat with us from Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was a member of the Born Again Christian community, and I thought that I needed to have a good understanding of other people's point of views. So I took it upon myself to read other holy books, upon which I decided that there is more to it than I realized, and I am now a pluralist. So I did change my mind.
A pluralist believes in, I gather, many things.
Yes, yes.
And that no one book has supremacy over another.
I've come to the conclusion that when you're dealing with the infinite, it's really just foolish to think that anybody has the answer. You know, there's more, it's just too big.
And it was just through self-education that you came to this conclusion?
Yes, I read the Tao Te Ching I started with, thinking I was going to tear it apart,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't happen. And then the Bhagavad Gita, which is fabulous. I read the Book of Mormon and the Koran, and probably some others that aren't coming to me, lesser books.
Hmm.
And there's just, you know, people are looking for truth, and I think it's a mistake. I was mistaken to think that it was contained in one belief system.
All right, well,
put it that way.
Truth is something that we can all have an opinion and argue about. Facts, however, we shouldn't altogether disagree about that. Here's a nice email. This from Scott Nessler, and he quotes Ralph Waldo Emerson. Every fact is related on one side to sensation and on the other to morals. The game of thought is on the appearance of one of these two sides to find the other, given the upper to find the underside. He also quotes himself. It's a fact that facts are misused, and Mark Twain, get your facts first, and then you can distort them as you please. So that may be the lesson here. Brandon Nyhan, thank you so much for your time today, and good luck.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Bin Laden was George Sr.'s clan not so long ago. Set George up with a retirement plan, lots of low-tax dough. Go down White House, way down in payoff land. Tell the CIA, leave the Saudis alone. There's oil and gas in Uzbekistan, oil and gas must flow. So we deposed the Taliban. Where'd Osama go? Bend down, Congress. Kneel down and lend a hand. Tell the people liberty must go. There's more to gain in war than peace. Let the weapons flow. Destabilize the Middle East. Enrich the CEO. Go down, brother. Way down on Florida sand. Tell the justices not to let my people vote. The VP had a heart attack. Oily blood, you know. While he's still here, let's bomb Iraq. Give the rubes a show. Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison we had to let those amendments go. The opium crop was blown away. Let them poppies grow. Thanks to U.S. troops, it's back today. Only goes to show. Go down Wall Street, sell off my shares today. Tell my broker, put it all in blow.
Your appetite for destruction can't be easy to defend. When all your heroes have abandoned you, or have you abandoned them? From civilians to enemies, bombs can't discern. They just destroy all in their path. Will we ever learn? How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless killing spree? How many kids can you kill and send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV? Whatever happened to your resolve? How did you join their ranks? Afraid of some Arab who can't even find reverse on a Russian tank. When the whole wide world is watching and they think that you're absurd. From Canada to East Asia, they're giving you the bird. How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless murder spree? How many people can you kill and send the working class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV? Don't you read read the news and not just CNN. There are other news outlets not owned by our government. You can call me left-wing liberal, or you can call me communist. But are you totalitarian or just an anarchist? Go and follow your false prophet, that lying, greedy man who doesn't have the intellect to run a hot dog stand. How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless murder spree? How many kids can you kill and send the working class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV? In your SUV. In your SUV. In your SUV.
There is a house in New Orleans. They call it the rising sun. And it's been the ruin of many poor girls. And me, oh God, for one. If I had listened to what my mother said, I'd have been at home today. But foolish, oh God, let a rambler lead me astray. Go tell my baby sister, don't do what I have done. But shun that house in New Orleans. They call the rising sun. I'm going back to New Orleans. My is almost run. I'm going back to spend my life beneath that rising sun.
Saying you can get it wrong and still think that it's all right. Think of what I'm saying. We can work it out and get it straight or say goodnight. We can work it out. We can work it out. Life is very short and there's no time for fussing and fighting, my friend. Right or I am wrong. Why you say it your way? That's chance that we might fall apart before too long. We can work it out.
That's all, folks.